Good afternoon. It's another great Friday, and we're listening to Storm Watch with Dale Allison here on BPN Radio. Glad that you all are back with us today and listening to our show. We appreciate your attendance, dedicating some time to hopefully learning some things that would be beneficial to you and your church in whatever capacity that you're in church leadership. And today I think we're going to talk about things that are needed by the church for a variety of things. Again, years ago, we never concerned ourselves about any of these issues. It just didn't seem like it was anything that we were going to be involved with from the aspect of church. The idea was that the pastor took care of seeing people in the hospital, doing some counseling, handling marriages, funerals, and visiting some new folks that would come into the church as a visitor to recruit them for membership in the church. And everything else pretty much took care of itself. But that was years ago in a much slower time and a less litigious time in our society. Today, we're a very litigious society. We're looking to sue for everything, being offended, whatever that turns out to be. I think offense is very, very much like beauty. It's in the eye or ear of the beholder. The things that used to be able to, when I was a kid, I guess I'm dating myself here, we have to be careful the dinosaurs don't show up again, but, you know, it was sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. That doesn't seem to be the case today. It seems that people are taking offense at almost anything, and it's getting to the point that of ridiculousness, I think, for a lot of us. Obviously, feelings with some people are very frayed, and it didn't take much to get some people upset about things that are said. I remember years ago, there was a lawsuit that came out. A young man had gone to church with a friend, and they had a guest minister who was one of those hellfire and damnation preachers, and he began calling out sin and sinners and showing how they could get right and many of you who are older heard that there were preachers out that could preach hell so hot that everybody broke into a sweat. Well, that apparently was a situation with this minister, and the guy just stood there in the pew and did not move, did not come down, did not seek to turn his life over to the Lord or repent from any of his ways. And subsequently, the church was over, and he and his friend left, and he got back to his apartment. He just apparently was overwhelmed with fear, and he couldn't sleep. And he was ends up prowling all night. This happened for two or three nights in a row. And he sought medication to give him some relief, not realizing all he had to do was just repent, turn his life over to the Lord, and disappeared. And so subsequently, after spending some time with and money with some shrinks and a couple of doctors, he finally got some, to his understanding, relief, and therefore sued the church and the minister, saying that they had inflicted him with a severe mental trauma. Of course, the church, that lawsuit didn't last very long, but at least he found an attorney who was willing to come in and try to move that case forward to secure some monetary damages for this young man. So there's not a lot the church can do with regard to visitors that come in. You're not going to be able to see that they're having some problems. But there are other areas that seem to be very easy for lawsuits, and it's something that I think we need to pay some attention to. One thing is our young people. There are numerous activities that the church offers to many young people. There's field trips that at the Sunday school or vacation Bible school kids would take. There are, if you've got a Christian school and you participate in athletics, then you're going to have kids that are either driving in school bus or in cars that are owned by parents who are transporting the students from one venue to another to play basketball, volleyball, numerous other sports, soccer, football, and in grade school you're going on field trips. You're going to the fire station, to the zoo, various other places that the kids are getting a day out. Well, these are trips that the church needs to consider having a release signed, a parental agreement that, yes, little Johnny can go on a field trip, and we won't necessarily hold the church liable unless there's some severe negligence involved. And so these releases are given and signed by the parents to allow their child to go on these trips. And most of them, it's pretty much a general release. Just a, hey, I consent to Johnny doing this and being transported from point A to point B and returning. And that's what most people had and most churches had for years. Now, some of that changed in part because of a lawsuit out of West Virginia, and it involved a young man who was killed doing whitewater rafting. And the release that the mother signed said he was going on a boating trip. Well, there's a lot of difference between going on a boating trip and doing whitewater rafting. If you're thinking boating trip, you're thinking at calm waters on a lake, And whitewater rafting, you're seeing tons of water cascading down a rocky creek, a river situation with boulders on the side, and being pushed by this high speed water. And it's dangerous, very much so. Now, I know that people go up and down. You can go to certain places around the country and you have these big rubber rafts with 10, 15 people in there, and they're all paddling. They've got life jackets, they've got helmets on their head, and a guide with them who has been down that stretch for years and knows every twist and turn where every boulder is, and it's a thrilling ride to go down. You get plenty wet with water splashing over, and you're bouncing around, slipping between rocks, dropping down, cascading like many waterfalls, and moving yourself down. And it's thrilling when it's over. A little scary sometimes when you're participating in it, but it's certainly an adrenaline rush. So you can tell there's a lot of difference between casually sitting in a boat and driving across a very placid lake and doing whitewater rafting. So Mom had signed off on a boating trip, and her son was killed with, and she discovered that it was because they had taken a whitewater rafting trip, and there had been an accident. He had been pushed out and apparently smashed against one of the rocks, and had severe brain trauma and subsequently died. She sued the church, and of course the whitewater rafting company and some other folks that were involved. And the church came in and moved for a dismissal on the basis of, hey, I've got this release, and she's released us of any and all liabilities because of this trip. And the judge recognized, like we do here, a lot of difference between a boating trip and a whitewater rafting, and basically said, no, that release won't hold up, and you're going to have to defend your decision to one, put in the boating trip, two, not providing adequate protection for this young man. Sad story in that the mom lost her son, but one that all of a sudden those who are involved in church work, whether as attorneys or consultants or CPAs or whatever, is making sure that their church at least understood that maybe there should be an additional release if you were in fact going to do something that's hazardous. And you go, well, what's hazardous? Well, I think you could certainly make a case that whitewater rafting is hazardous. I think if you're going to take kids skydiving, I think a case could be made that that's fairly hazardous. And I think one of the things that you could consider is a missionary trip. Now, that shouldn't be hazardous, shouldn't be, but let's face it, you're going to go to a different culture, different country. They have different wildlife. You're going to be, in many instances, you're not in a city. You're going to be heading out to the country. Maybe you can take a car or truck most of the way. But I'll tell you what, most of those countries do not have the superhighways we have here in the States. And a lot of their roads are nothing more than dirt or gravel roads, many times extremely narrow, especially in the mountainous areas. And you may have to hike. It may be that they can only go so far with vehicles, and everybody gets out, gets their little backpacks, and they take off on a hike. Well, you may be walking through jungle terrain where there could be poisonous snakes. I mean, that's something that has to be considered. And if you're doing that, you may want to consider some sort of hazardous release to get the parents of a minor to sign off on, and even the adults who are going along as chaperones or as helpers to sign. They need to understand that there are some hazards involved in this. And if they recognize that and are willing to take that risk, then, you know, let's have a release sign that says that. So it's something that you need to consider. If you're not doing it, you certainly need to consider it, because you really are at risk. If you've got kids going out on field trips and athletic events and all, and you haven't secured from them some sort of release to participate so that you can have some help and guidance in that regard, to be able to at least have some element of protection for yourself as a church. Another thing that churches are leaving themselves open for is copyright violations and copyright violations not only for stuff that's already in print or music that's been written, but also for potential copyright violations of individuals who are creating things with the church. Many of our churches are blessed with highly creative people who have musical talent, who have writing talent, who are able to create plays for our young people, create songs, and they're part of the youth ministry. But maybe they're just volunteers. They come and participate. The question comes up, who owns that work? If you're a volunteer and you come to church and you're part of a planning team of activities, and the leader looks to you and says, is it possible you could help us choose someone else to help you if necessary, or do you think you'd be able to prepare a little play? And here's what we'd like to show. We'd like to have our little play have a theme, and our theme is one love one another, and do you think you could do that? Well, sure, I could do that. And so they go about preparing this little play. And they come in, they spend time with the little kids, they have them learn their parts and put on this play, and it's a tremendous success. A couple of people are visiting the church for the first time, and they are attracted to the play and says, "Boy, this is something that our church would like to do. Who do we need to see to get a copy?" And so you suddenly realize that maybe what we have here is marketable product. May be able to sell this play. Make some money. Now the question is, who does the play belong to? We have, essentially in the copyright law, one thing that is true is whoever makes it owns it. That's a basic, simple rule. There are exceptions, of course. And one of the exceptions is something called a work for hire. So that means somebody hires me to do a play. And I create the play. And I say, X play by Dale Allison. But who owns it? Not Dale Allison, because I was hired specifically by the ABC Church to create this play. So that becomes a work for hire. The church, the ABC Church, now owns the play because they basically paid me to create it. I may have my name on it, but it's going to be copyrighted by them. So the ABC Church now has the ability to reproduce that play, sell it around the country, to other churches, other organizations who want to be able to buy that play and put it on, and whatever royalties get paid, they'll get paid to the church just to work for hire. One of the questions that comes up that everybody seems to look at is this volunteer? There's certainly arguments to be made that if the volunteer was asked by the church or whoever is in charge of the event to do that, and they do that, an argument can be made that they, being a volunteer, they provided that service to the church and could be very much akin to a work for hire, even though they obviously were not paid. Flip side of that argument could be made that, hey, they volunteered, they're not providing anything that gives away their talent. That's not what they came here for. They didn't come here to give away their talent. They came to help. And part of the help didn't include this, but they were asked to do it, so they did it. Now, obviously, if it's a play that's performed one time and nothing ever happens to it, nobody's going to argue one way or the other. But if it turns out to be something special, yeah, some people are going to wonder. So what do we do? Well, some churches will ask those people who are going to be creative in that regard to sign a creative rights assignment. So when you ask someone to think about doing a play for, you would probably ask them to sign this creative rights assignment, which basically would say, I'm going to be doing some volunteer work for the church, and because of that, I understand that whatever I create, I'm going to, whatever rights I may have in that creation, I'm going to assign to the church. I don't want to make anything off of this. I want them to have the rights to whatever I create. And what you have then is you have a document that you can put in the file and be in a position that if the person changes their mind down the road, because all of a sudden the play that they made becomes the hottest thing in the children's church, everybody around the country wants a copy, and the church is making money hand over fist because of it. And believe me, they probably, whoever it is that helped, as long as they're in the church, they're not going to say one thing about it. But as soon as they leave the church, well, then their whole outlook changes. And they have an interest in getting their money, in quotes. Then you can pop out with this creative rights assignment and said, hey, I gave the church the right to this years ago. And you've got yourself protected. Without one of those, you're going to be in a lawsuit. And it may cost a good bit of money. That's one of the things that about lawsuits. Lawsuits are going to cost money. If it's covered by insurance, then your insurance company is going to handle it for you. If it's not covered by insurance, you're the one that's footing the bill. And a lot of churches can't afford to be putting out tens of thousands of dollars to defend themselves something. So, again, as we've talked in weeks past, make sure you consult with your insurance carrier. See if you've got coverage that would extend to something like these copyright problems that might come up. And if you don't have that coverage, may want to think about getting a copy as a rider onto your policy so that you have that coverage just in case. Well, we've reached about the halfway point of our show here, and I want to remind everybody that we're on this Stormwatch here on BPN Radio, and we're here each and every Friday at 1 o'clock Central Time and at 7 o'clock Central Time. So we're looking for that. Those two times, we hope that you have an opportunity at least one of those times to be able to tune in and be a part of our show. We also need to know that the BPN Radio is on the air and is providing a service, not just with this show, but with any of the other shows that are on, as well as the prayer programs that are leading our nation in toward a revival here in our country. But this doesn't stay on by itself. It costs money to operate. And so if you're enjoying this show, or you're just tuning in and saying, hey, I like these other shows and I like the prayer part, show that not only do you enjoy it, but as the old saying, you know, you need to put your money where your mouth is. If you enjoy it, well, then let's support it. And you'll find there at the donate button that you can donate, participate in our show, provide an opportunity to support us here at BPN Radio, and you need to do it over the internet. There'll be an address there that you could write a check, stick it in the mail, but do consider supporting BPN Radio. It's a lifeline for a lot of people, and it's providing you with a lot of information and prayer support for those things that matter to you and that you need agreement and prayer to be able to move forward. So we look forward to your participation, and you'll feel good about it as well. Another thing that a lot of our churches that are able to do is that they have the type of facilities that they can rent out part of their facilities for a number of purposes. Wedding receptions, weddings, funerals, showers, baby showers, wedding showers. And so many of the churches who are not occupying 24/7 their facilities, it gives them a chance to help some others in the community, to provide them with a place to have their reception or wedding or what have you, for a modest fee, and helps them in the community. Those who have family life centers, who have gymnasiums, many times they will partner with the city and allow some of the recreational basketball leagues to come in and use their facilities on certain nights when the church is not having activities those evenings. Now, when that happens, yes, you have insurance that will cover some of it, but you're going to want somebody else to help you with the insurance, because these are not just ordinary guests coming in. You're actually leasing these facilities to a group of people that you may not know well. You don't know about their the people that they're going to be inviting to these events. And so you're going to want a facilities use agreement that explains that you are renting the facilities here's the rules you have to live by. For instance, a lot of churches, they're not going to want alcohol to be served at an event that's going to be there at the church. They're certainly not going to be wanting smoking going on in the building. There may be other things that they have in their list of do's and don'ts. So you come in and they say, yes, okay, well, if you want to rent our facilities, then here's what you need to do. You're going to tell us you're not going to serve alcohol. You're not going to allow smoking in here. There's not going to be any loud music or disco dancing or whatever is put on that list that you're going to indicate is conduct you're not really going to allow in your facility. You're also going to understand that they're responsible for at least cleaning up, putting up the tables and chairs that are brought out for their event, and make sure that you have everything covered, as well as what the fee is going to be for them to be able to do that. And then once that's done, then you've got your money up front. You've got some indication that there's going to be some insurance that's going to cover that. At least will help your insurance company if something does happen. And a lot of churches do that. Now, several of them have begun to realize that in certain communities, the fact that you lease out your facilities as a church, you become a place of public accommodation. And public accommodation now puts you in a position where you must abide by the local legislation, which is saying no discrimination on the basis of race, creed, color, national origin, sexual orientation. While you're sitting back and you don't want same-sex marriages in your church, you don't want, maybe the church takes that as their position. Well, if that's your position, then you better quit renting out your facilities. Or you structure your facilities use permit or agreement in a way that lists certain kind of conduct that you will allow and other conduct you will not allow. But you're probably asking for trouble. It's awful hard for you to allow Susie and Bob to use your facility for their wedding reception. You don't know Susie, you don't know Bob, you just leased it out to them. But Bill and Fred want their wedding reception, and you're going to say no. Better have a good reason for why you're saying no, because otherwise you're potentially violating the public accommodations section of the city ordinance or county ordinance or whatever it would be with regard to public accommodation. Most public accommodation laws have exceptions for churches with regard to religious services. that they have some protection. They can, if you will, discriminate. Now, because it has to do with religion. Now, you start leasing your facilities out to a variety of individuals and other religions, then it's extremely difficult for you to stand up and say, no, hey, we're just exclusively this or exclusively that. Exclusively means ain't nobody else there. Nobody else using these facilities. It's just exclusive for this activity. That's fine to say, but actions speak louder than words. So if you're letting every Tom, Dick, and Harry lease those facilities for a variety of activities, and then you burr up because some other people request to use it, and you go, well, homie, we don't believe that way, and so you know we can't follow up on that. We're not going to allow you to do that. Well, prepare for a lawsuit. Be ready to defend your position, because that's what's going to happen. You know, that's going on in our country right now. Now, not so much churches, although I expect that to be happening almost any day. But what's happening now is you've got Christian business people who are in some aspect of the wedding business, whether they're photographers, bakers, florists, apparel people, and what's happening is there's individuals who are desiring to have a same-sex wedding, and they're asking for wedding cake, wedding photographs, flowers, apparel, and the Christian businessmen are saying, I cannot do that because you're asking me to support an activity I do not believe in, and so therefore I'm not going to supply you with this cake, or I'm not going to do your photographs, or I'm not going to supply you with the flowers, whatever. And invariably, these people are hauled into court. If not direct court, then into some sort of hearing before a civil rights commission, who then determine that they have violated the civil rights of these individuals who were seeking to secure a cake or photographs or flowers or whatever, and that they have therefore discriminated against them and are subject to punishment, including substantial fines. And you know, we all know that the bakery shop there in Colorado, that case was basically thrown out, but it was thrown out on what some people would describe as technical grounds, rather than on what would be considered the merits. But what do you mean by merits? Did he have, as the baker, did he have a legitimate constitutional right as a Christian to deny the wedding cake to these two men who were planning on getting married? That's the question. But that was not what was decided. What was, when they reviewed everything, they said that the commission there in Colorado had shown a bias against this individual and against his religious beliefs, so he did not get a fair shake in this hearing. So because of that, they threw the case out and basically said you couldn't hold him guilty because the people who were trying it were biased. Well, that didn't solve the problem. It just pushed it. Some people say just kick the can down the road. It didn't solve the problem. And the lady in Washington who was the florist, her case was followed up not long after that, and the Supreme Court just basically said, we're going to send it back for a rehearing before the Washington Commission. And we asked them to look at the masterpiece decision as a guideline, as they determine whether this woman violated their discrimination law. So once again, it was can was kicked down the road. Why? Well, that's a pretty touchy subject. And the church is going to be right in the middle of that. I mean, right now, it's Christian business people. I think as long as whatever the church is involved in, if they decide that they have an ecclesiastical position for what they're doing, I don't think right now the court's going to try to force the church to do something they really don't want to do. Now, state law doesn't distinguish that many times. State law wants to require the church to have to do everything that anybody else does, in spite of the religious beliefs of the church. I think the day's coming when they're going to try to force the church to do something. And then maybe the court will make a decision. But right now, it's difficult because they are attempting to create a situation where there should be no discrimination with regard to anybody. Whether you are a gay, whether you are heterosexual, whether you're transsexual, bisexual, pansexual, whatever all the other stuff is. And they're basically saying everybody should be treated the same by everybody. That's something that, what we're trying to do is we're trying to legislate morality, and that never works out. I think the church is a place that we're taught that God hates sin, but he loves the sinner. Not because of what he does, but because he's one of God's creation. People don't understand that. They think if God's a God of love, he loves everybody, which that's true. But he doesn't love necessarily what they do. I mean, if you're a parent, you somewhat understand now a little more about what your parents were doing. I remember one of the spankings that I got, my dad gave me, "Son, this is going to hurt you, hurt me more than it's going to hurt you." Well, Dad, why don't you take my place if that's the case? It hurt them because, he loved me. And he was going to have to give me a corrective interview with a wooden spoon. And he really didn't want to do that. I had great parents. But my mom, many times we'd get in trouble and we would end up sitting on basement steps waiting for my dad to come home. So my dad came home from a hard day's work, and when he walked in, my mom would say, "Your son is sitting on the stairs," which meant he's done something wrong. You need to punish him for it. So, welcome home, Dad. He doesn't even get a chance to say hi, and he's in saying, "Okay, let's head down in the basement," and that's where we got our punishment. And it probably did hurt him because it hurt me when I had to punish my son and my daughter. I was fortunate I didn't have to punish him often, but it still hurt when I did. And even though I did not like what they had done, I still loved them. That love wasn't going to change because they had done wrong. I wish they had done better, but it didn't happen, and we were providing some correction. But I still loved him. So we're getting to that point where if we're going to have to accept everybody and their positions, it's going to be difficult for a lot of people. You don't want to be in a position where you condone what you believe, and as a Christian, they're told in the Word is sinful conduct, sinful activities. So I understand why a photographer, baker, florist, why they would say, "I don't believe in your marriage. I don't believe that's right. I don't believe that's godly. I don't want to participate in your wedding. And you're asking me to participate by baking the cake, taking photographs, providing flowers. I don't want to do that. I want to be able to provide a cake, photographs, and flowers for something that I believe in, not for something I don't believe in." And, I understand. I understand that where we were back in the late 50s, early 60s, especially when it came to African Americans. Certain parts of our country, in fact, here in Georgia, where I live, because people didn't believe that African Americans were equal to whites, they therefore separated them. They had their own drinking fountains, their own johns, their own schools, and they were not allowed to stay in quote-unquote white hotels. And you know, they had to go to a certain part of town in order to stay. Even ball teams, when they came south with African-American players, they were not able to stay in the same hotel, not able to eat in the same restaurants. So I understand just because a person has a belief doesn't make that belief right for everybody. But there's a difference between having that belief and following the Word of God. Well, folks, we've come to the end of our time, and it flew by pretty fast today. We've got a lot more things to talk about, and we will in future weeks. Suffice it to say that as we come to the end of this day, we're going to ask the Lord's blessing and on everything that we've said. Father, we ask for your blessing on these words that we spoke. We ask these situations to be brought to the attention of the church, that they may begin to look and see what they may need to do to better protect themselves and to allow the church to continue to grow in faithfulness to you. And for that, we give the praise, glory, and honor in Jesus' name. Thanks for being a part of our show today. Thank you for tuning in to BPN Radio, in particular today to Stormwatch. This is Dale Allison saying, God bless, and see you in church.